Hello and welcome to the Lalo podcast. I'm Juan Medina, founder of Lalo. Our podcast has the same mission as our app, which is simply to capture and share people's stories. What are the memories that you want to preserve about your time together with family and friends? Whether it's sharing a funny story, preserving wedding pictures, or remembering a loved one, we want Lalo to be a place for folks to connect in a private and ad-free space. I hope what you hear today will inspire you to document your stories and share them with the people you care about.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining us today for the very first Lalo podcast. And today I have the guest Eliana Murillo. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I am totally honored to be your first guest and I can't wait to dive in. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Well, I know you've done so many amazing things, founded different companies, done great work in the Latinx community. But before I steal too much of your thunder, really today was about learning a little bit more about your journey of how you got there. So maybe taking us back to where you grew up, your family, all that rich history, and then get to all the great things that you're doing today. That sure works for you.
Yeah, that sounds good. So thank you to everyone listening. I'm excited to share some of my stories. So I'm Mexican-American from California. I was born and raised in Oxnard and Ventura. So I was technically born in Ventura, raised in Oxnard. And my family is from two parts of Mexico. So my dad's side's from Jalisco. He was born there, moved to the US when he was four. And then my mom was born in El Paso, but raised in Juarez for 2 years. They're from Chihuahua and then moved to California, to Ventura. So I have a very big Mexican-American family. My mom is one of nine kids. My dad is one of four, but I have like three cousins on my dad's side and 25 or something on my mom's side. So a lot of familia. Grew up very close to all my primos and primas and was just really raised in a community that's centered around culture and a lot of community. My parents were really involved in everything going on in Oxnard. My mom's a teacher, my dad's an optometrist, and have always been big advocates for the community, local politicians that they support that are their friends, trying to create more Latino leadership on the ground. And so that was a big part of what shaped me growing up, was that there was an expectation of contributing, of showing up in community, supporting people who look like us, who want to be leaders and contribute to education and advocacy and so forth. And so I give my parents a lot of credit for that because it's important to me now. And when people ask me, like, why do you advocate for the community and why are you involved? I'm like, I was raised with this. My family created that, not only expectation, but kind of like that bar. And my mom always said, in everything you do, who are you helping? And so as I share more about my career, that's sort of a theme that'll come up a lot because that really drove me in many ways. So I'm super grateful to have that, not only the warmth of familia, but that like that kind of in my DNA charge to want to contribute. So yeah, grew up there and actually credit to them. My mom said, you have to apply to Harvard. You never know unless you try, when it was time to apply to schools. Did not want to, did not believe I could get in. And I actually told her, mom, kids from Oxnard don't go to schools like Harvard. And, you know, it felt like a fact to me and one that I was not realistically going to prove wrong. And, but she and my dad had always made me really focus on education. They're both first gen. My mom has older siblings who went to college, a few, but, you know, parents, neither of them had parents who'd gone to school in Mexico formally beyond high school and definitely not college here. And so, that was really important for me. I think that I had parents who really wanted even more, like they had gone and I find their journey incredible. I always tell them like, I can't believe you did so much in one generation. My grandparents didn't speak English and came here to work, you know, as many of our families have, and for them to be able to go to school and then instill that in us. And so my mom was like, well, the bar is even higher now. And she's like, no one told me about applying to Harvard growing up. You have to. So I ended up going. I got in and couldn't believe it. And I actually had done culinary arts growing up. That was my real big passion. And so my dad was the one who always really pushed for me to do AP classes, honors classes. And my mom was the one who said, you know, do your schoolwork. She knew I was going to, but she was the one who said more about like, follow your passions, follow your dreams. So I was kind of split doing hardcore culinary arts program and like competitive cooking and cake decorating, and then the academics. And so I ended up going to Harvard. And then while I was there, really involved in the community there and created an organization about Latinos interested in different career paths. And so I was on this trajectory, ended up at Google after starting a group to help people get jobs at companies like that. And when I graduated, my mom gave me a Harvard apron and said, you can go do whatever you want now. You did your part of the deal of just getting a degree in something. I, as the daughter of my mom's raised here even more so, but like, you know, immigrant mentality for sure. My dad's like, we didn't work as hard for you to not get a degree in something. And so again, I keep crediting my parents because it's just massive, but they wouldn't have pushed, if they hadn't pushed me in this way, my life would be so different now. And so, yeah, I did 10 years at Google. I left this past July and was sort of already on this trajectory career-wise. But now as an entrepreneur, it's been fun to reimagine what my life can look like. And my family and I have an organic tequila company, which has been all of our side hustle for many, many years now. And it's been a family labor of love, family project turned business. So mom and I designed the bottles. My dad figured out the organics of how to do everything sustainably, all naturally. My sister figured out like the logo and or like the font we use. So we were all hands on deck. And when the pandemic happened and just thinking about so many things, a lot of factors came into me deciding to be an entrepreneur full time, both from a business standpoint, thinking about how can I help my family business more? How can I play a more active role in advocacy? Like Black Lives Matter happened and affected me a lot. I think many of us were affected by that. And I've been committed to diversity, inclusion, equity, multicultural, all the things for my entire career. At Google, I founded the multicultural marketing team to the point of, in everything you do, who are you helping? That was thanks to my mom nudging me in that way, always advocating for access, and decided to make a pivot to make sure I'm supporting more diverse founders, creating technology that I think will serve our communities. And so I get to collaborate with my dad a lot more, doing the business. He and I primarily do it, and my sister is involved as well. But so having our side hustle turn more formal hustle now that I'm not at Google, and then coaching, consulting, investing in startups and small businesses in my realm, which I call Element & Company, and creating community, you know, like I was raised to do. I started Latinas Who Brunch. It's a community of badass Latinas across the country. We have over 17 states on board. I mean, chapters and multiple chapters in different states, 17 states though. And we have international chapters ready to start. So once we're past everything, we're ready to keep activating even more. But yeah, that's a little of the family story, how it wove into my career journey, and now doing a lot more with family too. Thank you for creating this, because I know you're going to interview a lot of people, and the more we can tell our stories, it's awesome. And I hope I can ask you some questions at some point too, because the first episode, we have to hear more about you and Lalo, and I'm just excited to.
I'd love to hear maybe a little bit about how you've kind of stayed connected, like obviously through your parents, but I know you spend time in Mexico, et cetera. Yeah. How's that been for you?
Yeah. I have to credit my parents again, because was more used to English than my mom was, I guess. His dad spoke some English, and so because of working on the railroads and things like that. So anyway, so language being one factor, I really don't think Latinidad should be defined by language ability at all, but it did create a different relationship that I could have with my grandmother, for example. And I really value that a lot. And she lived with us for some time. I think that was a factor. But one of the things my mom did growing up that was really meaningful to me, that I didn't understand how meaningful it was then, just thought like, it's just a thing we do. But my mom made sure we volunteered a lot in the community in the way that she was raised to do. So my family's very Catholic.
Yep.
I sometimes say I'm like a recovering Catholic. I'm like, yeah, we're just in the hand and kind of all the above. But my mom grew up volunteering for the holidays with the Guadalupanas, the señoras of the church that would kind of make the goodie bags for kids and things like that. So my mom took us, and we were right there next to the same señoras, the old ladies that my mom did this with, like generational experiences that some of my cousins didn't get to have, or my friends growing up definitely did not. They were like, what did you do this weekend? I was like, yeah, we like made goodie bags with old ladies at the church. You know, it wasn't really the norm, but she wanted us to know what it's like to show up, be present, be helpful. I love when people ask about what motivates me from an entrepreneurial standpoint and even our family business, because it really is family. It's not just doing it as a family, but the way that my great-grandparents did things is so critical to how we do what we do. So for example, my dad's two great-grandfathers together built the church in the community. So my abuelito Avelino, he had the limestone in his ranch and they used that to build it. And my Papa Isaias from my grandma's side, he was able to pay to have it built, and he had a bodega. And so he was known for helping the community. People would put things kind of almost like on their tab, and he had books and books of tabs, and a lot of people never paid those tabs, but he wanted to provide as best he could, you know, for his family and the community. And my abuelito Avelino, similarly, they had a ranch where we now grow the agave for our alquimia tequila, and they had a well. And he said, as long as the well has water in it, the community could come and take water and have that as a resource. And so he even built an area where women could come and wash their clothes with the water and, you know, take whatever they needed as he just felt like if you can provide for the community will be there for you too. And Mother Nature too. He said, if you take care of the land will take care of you. So we've done everything organically in the way that he did, even though he didn't grow agave. That was something my dad figured out how to do, but those values of providing for community, taking care of the environment, and just being honest about what we're doing and using it as a way to help people. I think about that all the time. And I got to meet my great grandmother. I was 2 and I think I have a memory of her. I don't know if it's from seeing so many pictures, but it feels like right. A memory of mine. But you know, I didn't meet my great grandfathers, and yet I feel like their drive, their passion for community and for what they wanted to contribute is alive in my dad. And now I feel like it's alive in me, and it feels real. It feels real because I know we're doing it in a way that aligns with how they did it. And when we go back, we still meet people who tell me, your great grandfather helped my family. And when my dad's dad, my abuelito, came to the US, he was able to help people legally come to get work and, you know, help buy their groceries if they needed it, took them to church to show them the ropes of how to live in America. And the fact that there's still families who say, your grandfather, great grandfather's great grandmother helped me and taught me, that's a real connection that I want to preserve through what we're doing. You know, maybe we need to document things. I think that Lala can be a part of that, and how we keep that the integrity of the story alive. But to me, that's now integrity of values that I hope to pass on, not just to my family, but in community. If I can share our stories, and maybe there's someone out there that's not related to us, but can feel that connection that like our people work really hard and have big hearts, and maybe we don't have that example anecdote, but someone else's family out there did it. And if that can inspire people who are building companies today, that's what I share, because I think the startups I'm working with, the founders, you know, often they're building in a way that's very conventional, in a way that, you know, what Silicon Valley looks like or how built companies in New York. It's like, but what if we do it our way? What if we do it with our community, our culture, and our values at the heart of it? Our community is so humble, and yet, you know, you have to kind of self-promote so much to get investments and all these things. And I think, what if we tell each other stories? So then instead of us having to self-promote, I can tell the Lalo story. I can talk about Juan's story and help each other build and share resources and just do more together. And that to me is the gift that my great grandparents passed down to me through my grandparents and my parents. And so I feel a real commitment to make sure that I keep that alive.
I love that. Yeah, definitely felt that, you know, with you and other folks in the Latinx community where, you know, we're helping each other out. If someone needs something, it's not like this long drawn out process. People just jump in, they offer helping hands, and everyone benefits. So I love that story.
Yeah. And I think a lot of our families kind of grew up this way. My mom, with her family, they came, and their neighbor taught my abuelita how to make a first turkey for Thanksgiving and, you know, how to do this American lifestyle. And, you know, they were creating a family that they chose. A lot of our families didn't bring their entire family at once or ever. And I think that we're kind of reliving that, where we're creating our own familia, people we choose, because the values are there. We can connect, and it's not so much posturing and being transactional as much as like, let's just help each other. Because someone said to me, as I shared what I do and what I care about, he said, I know where you're from, and now I know where you're going. And I think that's beautiful. If we're all building together, we may not know what that North Star, where it's going to take us, but we know we all want to build something that outlasts us and that hopefully does good for the world. And that's awesome. So why not be a part of that and help each other get there even faster or in one piece, you know, because it's not always an easy road, but with support, like what we are cultivating, I think it's amazing. And I'm excited to see where that takes us.
Well, I love that. Well, maybe we can close on that, but Eliana, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being on. I know you've had a long day.
For those listening, this is my third talk of the day, and I'm loving it. I'm so grateful to have this space to do it. And I'd love to actually share something that is about remembering the family, because I don't want to forget to mention it and to honor it. So I recently launched a course I'm going to be doing soon to help people find their light. And I call it Ignite the Light, How to Find Your Light When the World Thinks You're Shining. And in this world of podcasts and social media, people often just hear the career stories and the shiny things. They don't often know what's really going on behind the scenes. And I'll spare you the details, but I've had some wonderful highs and some very challenging lows. And, you know, like I said, in social media world, you don't often see the full take. You just see the highlights, the sizzle reel of the highlights. Earlier this year, my grandmother passed away, my dad's mom. And it was interesting to think about remembrance. I'm using that word. That's kind of the one that resonates for me related to Lalo. And she got COVID and survived, which was incredible, at 92, but a few months later did pass away. It's my dad's mom. And so I spent a lot of time thinking about how to support him and hold space for him and the family. But I thought there's so much to celebrate about who she was, who she is, you know, in spirit with us still. And one of the things for me and tied to what I love, which I hadn't really leaned into as a connection point with her much, because growing up, I was really into cooking pastries. In the pandemic, having to cook at home all the time, I leaned into cooking real meals and I hadn't done that before. And so I was in this mode of cooking a lot more lately. And I was with my dad for a couple of weeks to just be there to support him. We don't live in the same city. And so I wanted to be there. And I thought about, like, how can I honor my abuelita? Because, you know, my dad's dad had already passed away when I was little. And so I knew that for him, it meant no longer having either parent. And that would have a different kind of heaviness to it, aside from just missing his mom. And we hadn't been able to be there with her in the hospital because of COVID. And it was a very, very challenging year for everyone, but dealing with health complications was even harder. Well, one of the things I thought about was, I thought, like, well, you know, when someone passes, especially a parent, you see the inner child come out in the child, right? Even as an adult. And so I thought about my dad and what he was like as a kid and what was his relationship like with his mom. And I knew, and like many of our families, my abuelita, it's not a stereotype. I think it's something beautiful. She cooked a lot. She made a lot of wonderful meals. And that was, she kind of spent so much time in the kitchen that's the association my dad had with her, you know, someone who provided warmth and food that was a manifestation of love. And so I thought, okay, I need to cook. And I just went so hard trying to cook as many meals as I could for him. And it was my way of, you know, trying to support and help him remember her in a special way. And he told me not long before that she had this ability to go to a restaurant and try the food and recreate it at home, not speaking English, not asking for the recipe, not looking up any cookbooks. She could just kind of figure it out. And I didn't realize that I do that. And I didn't realize that we had this in common. I also didn't know until a few years ago that we have the same hair because she had it short. And no one knew. I mean, I didn't know where I got the hair from. My dad is bald. And so it turns out it's through him. So we have connections that I didn't really get to explore while she was alive. And I thought I had this feeling that I would feel closer to her after her passing, even if it's just my own awareness of, like, I told myself no more bad hair days. I have to honor her good hair. food, right? Like, I love figuring out how to recreate a meal. And so the day that I was like, oh, I really want to lean into this for my dad, I made him fried rice for breakfast because he said that that's one of the things. She went to a Chinese restaurant that my family always went to and she figured out how to make fried rice. She did not know any kind of Asian cooking otherwise, but she figured it out. And so I made it for him. And he's like, fried rice for breakfast? And I was like, yeah, I mean, it has eggs, you know, why not? And he ate it. And I was kind of watching him to see what he would say. And he's like, this tastes just like my mom's.
Oh my gosh.
And like, oh my God, I could not believe it. I'm, you know, kind of winging it. Let's see, get some rice and some sauce and try to figure it out. Obviously it's my sort of Latina approach to fried rice, which was hers. And so I didn't, you know, I never tried hers. I couldn't ask her for the recipe either, but to see that like sparkle in his eyes when he had that feeling, it's about so much more than the flavor. It's about so much more than just a meal. It was, he got to experience, it's going to hit me. He got to experience a little bit of her, you know, even though she wasn't with us anymore. And so I asked my family in Mexico if I can, next time I go, try to learn some of the recipes. Her sister is still alive and I'm close to her and I want to see, you know, they make the same salsa, they make a few things similarly, but I'm like, to the point of how we keep people's spirit alive, like, if the sensation of the flavor and the food, if I can keep that with us, I want to honor her that way. And that's something special for my dad and for the rest of the family too. So, and then the last part is, we almost lost my other grandmother 2 weeks ago. I thought I said goodbye and, you know, I cried, but felt happy for her. She was like, she said in Spanish, she's ready to rest. And I was like, she's lived a good long life. She's 94, 9 kids, all this life. And, my uncle said, you have to get the recipe for piedras out of her. She makes these basically Mexican scones. That's rocks in Spanish, right? And so I was like, I think it's too late. Like, we went to see at the hospital. Unless someone can film her on their phone, like, I don't know if we're going to be able to have them anymore. And no one else knew the recipe. So I had left and came back to LA thinking, you know, I said my part and, you know, got her last blessing. And then I got a text from my mom saying, Abuelita's doing great. She's coming home. And I was like, what? This was not at all, like, we all knew this was the end. And by the way, I had said goodbye for real 3 years ago and she made a comeback. So like, no para, sigue, she's keeps coming back. And I knew, like, the last, I don't know how long we have with her because of course her health is still delicate in a delicate state. But I told my mom, I didn't tell her. I said, I'm coming and I want to make piedras with these sort of scones. But I didn't tell her that I brought my camera, my phones, my tripods and ring light and everything.
Wow.
We're filming this because I don't care who says she's not camera ready. Nope, this is for me and maybe my cousins. It doesn't have to go on the internet. I just need this. And so she's like, no, I don't have the energy. When I asked if she'd make them with me, and I said, okay, I'll make them. Just tell me a little bit of what to do. Mm. So at first she's kind of, oh, 4 cups of flour. But then my tia is like, well, that's not what I have here. And another tia is like, we'll do it this way. So we're getting all types of mixed information. Mm. And I thought, okay, we don't know what this is going to turn out like. It might just be for the camera. It's for the experience. At least we captured it. There's no buttermilk. My tia says you can use sour cream. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what we're making. This is a Frankenstein dessert thing.
Right.
And she looked really anxious as I was trying to knead the dough. And she's like, if I could just wash my hands, I would do it myself. And I said, okay. So I'm like, she's getting kind of feisty. So I brought over a bowl of water with soap and she washed her hands. She starts kneading this dough with energy. We're like, we thought she was gone 3 days ago. And now she's huffing and puffing, getting in there. And she's like, don't add more flour. It was cute that she was almost being like snappy with me because she had it this way. I can't even tell you how insane it was to bite into this. This was some of the best biatra she's ever made in my entire life.
Wow.
With
that's
a recipe
amazing.
Hacked together, you know, and when I had one the next morning, I thought like this might be the last biatra I have that had her hands in. But it was so good.
Absolutely.
Oof, now you got me my feelings. And you know, of course, everyone's like one per person and they even cut them and they're messaging the group chat. Like, did someone drive one to San Diego so Angelica can have one, my cousin? And it was like, everyone was like, you did this. And I was like, no, she did this. I got to do this with her. But like, and now it felt like herencia in Spanish, right? Or inheritance. Like she gave me. And now I have to thank God I have the recording because I have to figure out how we'd made it happen. It was like, I think 1 teaspoon of baking soda and someone said it was 4 and that wasn't right. But what we did was right. What we did was perfect. It was the best I've ever tried. And now I might have to make them with sour cream every time because they were
there
so
you go.
And I'll experiment with it. But I told my mom and Abuelita's doing well. And I told her when I come home, we're making them every time I come home. We're not waiting to miss that opportunity ever again.
Wow. That's amazing. I love that story. That's so
good. I know
we
went longer.
Okay.
But I was
that's
like, I can't not. This is fresh. Like my Instagram following doesn't know about this, you know, because I didn't.
Right.
I even posted a story of my last abuelita's passing. I posted a picture and I didn't say that she had passed. I was just like, I can't have the questions and the comments right now. This is family, you know, and it's a lot.
Right.
And this one, I was like, I'm not even sure how to process talking about this because it was so special. And she's with us. And it's like, not that we're waiting any moment, but it's like, we have to embrace and celebrate every moment now. It's like,
right.
I don't care if you have energy, Grandma, we're making more piedras. but it brought her life. I mean, to see her. And then she's by the end of it, because at first she's like, I don't have the energy. She didn't really want to be filmed. Oh, she was speaking straight to the ring light.
Oh, nice. Okay.
She's on my show. And at some point I want to make this more formal. La Cocina Sabrosa. I have the URL. I want to make it a cooking show. And I said, you're my guest of honor. And when I launch it, she's my first guest on my cooking show.
Oh my gosh. I love that. That's amazing. And there's so much there with family and the tradition and food, which always like brings people together. And that's, I think, one of the best ways to pass on tradition, you know, to still cook what your grandmother made and pass that on. And that is so amazing.
I told my mom, so my mom makes these tamales that only, it's like my abuelito's recipe that somehow no other sibling of 8 other kids, no one has learned it. I mean, they sort of make their versions, but everyone knows they come to my mom's house every Christmas or a few days prior, usually on December 22nd. It's always the weekend before Christmas. And we make that one recipe. So everyone knows that's like, she got it from my grandfather. And I was like, I understand that what that means now. Like I have the piedra like within me.
Right.
Now I have to make sure I document it for whoever else wants to learn it, hopefully, or pass it on. And I've never had that feeling before where like I was given a gift that I have to retain and it feels like a gift I need to cherish very, very intentionally.
Absolutely. Well, awesome. Well, Eliana, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate your time and thank you for sharing your stories. So thank you.
Well, I can't wait for people to come in after me. I mean, they have to bring funny stories. They have to cry.
Oh, man. That's why you were the first guest.